everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is Nicolo, I'm going to not pronounce this right, Mealy. I'm close, she can tell me later. And she's here to talk about her new book, Runes for the Green Witch, and Herbal. It's actually an herbal grimoire. Now, she's a pagan, a writer, an herbalist, lots of different things, has practiced witchcraft for over 20 years with focuses on runes, folk herbalism, alchemy, and transmeditation. She's the owner and operator of Hands Full of Dust Apothecary, offering rune readings and homemade ritual products. And as usual, everybody, questions and comments from the chat room are always welcome. And if you're not in the chat room and listening to the live broadcast, you can join us at paraxradionetwork.com. Hi, Nicole. Sorry about your name. I looked at it three times.
You said my last name correct, which no one ever does. It is Mealy. It's Italian for honey. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I shouldn't have apologized then, but anyway. you know what? I very much liked something in your book right off the bat in the introduction, and I'm going to quote. There's nothing supernatural about magic. It's just as natural as the sun, the trees, and the processes of birth and death. That is really nice. I mean, it's very well said.
Thank you. Yeah, I've always kind of had a given the side eye with terms like supernatural or, I just think it's natural. We just don't quite understand it all yet.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do, right?
Well, yeah, and it's also belief. I mean, some people, you have to believe before you can trust it or learn it or whatever, and so, but yeah, supernatural is kind of an umbrella term that it covers too much, I guess. Maybe that's the right thing. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the book because it's a guide to working with runes and plant allies for manifestation and for healing and for spell work. And I've got to start by saying that I have no knowledge about runes, seriously, very much. I mean, very little. But I'm quite familiar with plant allies. So for my sake and others who may be in the same place that I'm at, can you talk about introducing what the runes are, the history, and their connection to Odin, perhaps?
Of course. So the runes are essentially just an ancient alphabet linked to pre-Christian Scandinavia. The first runic system came about somewhere around the first century, and it can be used as a writing system or as a system of magic and divination, similar to, you know, the contemporary usage of tarot. In folklore, the runes are kind of the language of the Norns. Now, the Norns are the Norse equivalent of the Greek fates. So these are three all-powerful sisters who are the embodiment of time. One is the past, one is the present, one is the future. They are the keepers of the runes, and they ultimately decide who gets to receive their knowledge. Now, I should add that the word rune or runa means secret, and they definitely live up to their name. So Odin, who was desperate for their wisdom, actually wounded himself. He stabbed himself with his own spear, and he hung himself upside down from the world tree. And this was meant as a sacrifice to be worthy to obtain the knowledge of the runes. Fun fact, those familiar with the tarot, in some schools of thought, the hanging man is actually believed to be a reimagining of the story of Odin's sacrifice.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. In a nutshell, that's the runes.
Yeah, and because to me, they were always kind of cryptic, and I didn't know anybody that was doing them, and I thought they were really hard and confusing, and so I just didn't really pay much attention to them. But how were you introduced to the runes?
So they really became front and center in my practice maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. I've been practicing witchcraft for a long time. Been very eclectic, and the runes came about. Actually, an old friend asked me if I was interested in pulling a rune. He had his bag of runes with him, and I said sure. And he placed a velvet drawstring bag in front of me and told me to clear my mind, reach in, and pull a rune. So I did. I pulled the Birkana rune, which when he explained to me what that rune meant, I shouldn't say kind of, I did know that the rune picked me and it wasn't the other way around. So Birkana is the rune of nurturing, of Mother Earth, of the divine feminine. And the mother archetype is something I've always identified with. I often joke that I've been mothering since the day I was born. plus Cancer is my rising sign. So I definitely vibe with that. So pulling Birkana felt like an invitation, and Birkana's way of saying, like, we know who you are, now it's your turn to know us. And the rest is history, as they say.
Oh, yeah, well, it was to be, you know. And
yeah.
I remember the reason I mentioned Odin was several years ago. So, you know, so far back, I don't even remember what the show was about, except that it was runes. And she was saying, well, Odin is my master, and I speak to Odin all the time. I do Odin's bidding because all the runes are alive. What do you say about that?
I don't view deities, I think, like many practitioners do. Mm-hmm. I necessarily view them as sentient beings, but more along the lines of archetypal energies. Like when I think of Odin, I think he's a facet of the divine masculine, kind of similar to like the Egyptian Thoth or Hermes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally respect that. It's really interesting to me, but it's just not the kind of experiences that I have had with deities.
Yeah, I just, you know, when she said, it sounded like she was his slave, and it just kind of, it didn't sound right to me, you know. I mean, deities are one thing, but, you know, okay, just had to check on that. All right, so I did a bit of homework, and I found out, well, maybe it's not good because I went to Google, but found out that the best known runic alphabets are the Elder Futhark. I don't know.
Yes.
Is that the right say? The Anglo Futhark and the Younger Futhark. So how do each differ? Or do they?
The Elder Futhark, like you said, is the most popular. Now, you're probably wondering why it has that name. So Futhark is an acronym. It is essentially the first letters of the sequence, kind of like how alphabet means like alpha, beta. The Futhark is is an acronym for the first runes in the sequence. Elder just means that it's the first one. So anyway, so yeah, the Elder Futhark, it's the OG. It's the one that most occult practitioners work with. And for those looking for literature on runes, you're mostly going to find information on the Elder Futhark. The Anglo-Saxon and the Younger Futhark are both minor variants of the Elder. The Younger, which was predominant during the Viking Age, actually, it's also called the Viking runes, shrunk down from 24 runes to 16, which is interesting because this was during a time when literacy was becoming more common, but the runes became smaller. Like I said, yeah, from 24 down to 16. Mm-hmm. And the Anglo-Saxon went the other way. It increased from 24 runes to 28. So I think why most people tend to just stick with the Elder Futhark is because the Younger and the Anglo-Saxon are so very close with minor differences. And the Elder Futhark seems to just really encompass everything you want in a system of divination and magic. So I think that's why it remains the number one mm-hmm. out of all.
Okay, so the book is divided into three parts. The first part, the second and third, obviously, are eights. And I was looking at it, you know, because that's spelled A-E-T-T. And then I see that each eight has eight runes.
Yeah.
and then each eight has its own underlying meaning. So you could explain that a little bit for us.
Yeah, of course. I know I always have to clarify myself when in workshops and whatnot when I'm talking about the eighth, because there's eight and an eight. Yeah. So actually, a tier is the plural form of eight. These are essentially just the families within the Elder Futhark runes. I believe eight means group. Or clan. So anyway, so there's three families, and you know, just like human families, they each have their own unique vibes to them. So the first eight, which is called Freya's or Freyr's eight, is a group of runes that handle matters of creation, instinct, and survival basics. The second eight, called Hagal's or Heimdall's eight, kicks off with some really difficult Dark Knight of the Soul type energies. Its themes include obstacles, life lessons, personal transformation. This is where, you know, if you're pathworking the runes, this is where you're really going to dive into some shadow work. And the third and final eight, called Tears Eight, takes us through social interaction, deep introspection, and culminates with spiritual awakening. I often compare it to the final card of the Major Arcana, the World. It's wholeness, and can be seen as a symbol of enlightenment. And also, like the Tarot, we can think of the Atir kind of like the cups, pentacles, wands, and swords. Like they each have their own underlying energies to them.
That makes sense. You're making it easier because I was like, I was thinking I'm never going to understand this. But yeah, good. You're a teacher. All right. So there's 24 of them. I mean, yeah, 20.
Yeah.
3 times 8 is 24. So, I mean, in order to kind of do it, I mean, I'm sure if you go and get a set of runes, it might come with a box. It'll come with a book that will kind of tell you which one is in where, in which eight it is. So you kind of have to eventually know and learn. And then the readings are much easier, aren't they?
Right, right. You know, I'm going to draw on the tarot a lot to kind of explain my way through the runes. But
that's,
you know,
helping a lot, yes.
like the tarot, you know, we don't necessarily need a book. We can kind of just look at the image and go intuitively like that, but we can't do that with the runes. But luckily there's only 24, whereas, you know, the tarot has 78.
Yes.
So it kind of makes up for learning them in that way. But yeah, you definitely need a guide to get you started.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so with tarot readings, you know, we shuffle the cards. With I Ching, they throw the bones. How do you cast the runes?
You can really use any and all of the methods because runes come in so many different forms. I have a rune deck, which I'm actually going to use later in the show to do some readings. And, you know, with the decks, I just shuffle and draw as if it was tarot. With my main set, my wooden runes, however, which are like little wooden coins, I typically would draw them from a bag, like I did with the person who introduced me to the runes. Or I'll place them all face down in front of me and draw that way, draw three or five or whatever the structure of the reading is. So yeah, you kind of just have fun with it and, you know, throw all 24 and see how they land. No, don't do that. You'll lose them. I've watched lots of runes trying to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, throwing them all down and, you know, some are going to be up and some are going to be down, and which ones do you grab? I mean, yeah, that gets a little thing, but difficult to understand when you don't know. But using
right.
the tarot things, I think a lot of people are with me, you're making it much easier. Is it particularly difficult to learn how to work with them, or is it just like any other divination thing? You just get used to it and you learn it.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it was difficult. As soon as I started working with them, I became just so enthusiastic and impassioned with it that I just really enjoyed it. And I introduced them to myself over a 25-day ritual. So I did one rune a day, and then on the 25th day was kind of the big ceremony that I did to,
You graduated.
Yes, I graduated. Thank you. That's perfect. That's exactly what I was looking for. So, you know, when I think of tarot, because it doesn't come as naturally to me and it's not something that hooked me in as much, I find tarot to be difficult, and it's mm-hmm. something that I still feel after more than 20 years, like I'm really trying to grasp still. But it wasn't that way for me with the runes. And I've heard people talk about how that they just can't grasp the runes, but the tarot came so naturally to them, or, you know, mm-hmm. So I think it just depends on how much you love it and how excited you are to do it. Cause then it's not really work at all. Right. You're just
yeah.
having fun.
That's true. And yeah, because I was like that with the tarot in the beginning. Oh my God, 78 cards, you know, upright, back, reversed. Oh my God. You know, I have
what?
To remember all of those things. And, you know, there are certain cards yeah. that you'd stick to. You know that card so well, and it draws you yeah. in. But I'm still with tarot, still a little bit sometimes because it's like, okay. This is easy. You have a little stone and it's got, what do you call it? A symbol. Sorry. And I think it sounds so much easier than I thought it would be. So this is a good thing. Yeah. So, do they come in all, they do come in all different materials, like wood or stones and whatever. Is there a difference between what materials the runes are made of?
So I think the best advice I can give someone regarding making their own set of runes is make them with a material that has significance to you. My main set, which I only use for myself, was that I said was created over the 25-day period was made from the fallen branch of a willow tree. And the willow is a tree that has always had a special place in my heart since childhood. So it was an easy choice for me. I know people, though, who use precious stones to make theirs, seashells, clay. A friend of mine made hers from the sea glass that she had collected from the shore. I even saw someone once create a set out of orange peels. I can't imagine those lasted very long, but just gives you an idea that, you know, just use your imagination. And if you can grab 24 of something, you can probably make some runes on it.
Wow. That's kind of neat though, you know? And so even if people go out and buy ready-made ones, they should probably get the ones that resonate with whatever creation they're from, right?
Right. And like in my store, I sell a lot of epoxy resin runes. Now, the thing about epoxy resin is it's not a medium that's found in nature. And right. It's not something that people are usually like, oh, epoxy resin, that's a sacred material. It's not. So how I make them is I include plant matter and crystal chips and, you know, different items that represent the energies that I'm trying to include in the runes. Like I have a set of Freya runes that are made with rose petals and little pieces of gold foil. So yeah, there's a bunch of different ways to do them. When I make epoxy resin runes for myself, I actually often add some drops of my own blood into the epoxy resin mix. That way
it's yours.
Like a strong bond between me and my rune set.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Yeah. There's a long old tradition of staining one's runes with their blood to enhance the link practitioner and runes.
Well, sometimes we use it in witchcraft too. So, you know, it's a binding thing to a lot of different things that we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Got a question from the guest room. I mean, the guest room. the chat room. she says, I keep my runes in a suede bag wrapped in 90-year-old Japanese silk. What flower, herb, or spice is the best to store along with them?
Mugwort's a good one. I like to charge my runes in rune or plants that are ruled by the element of water, because not only are they cleansing, but they also charge because they have that like lunar energy. So mugwort, jasmine, wormwood, anything along those lines. Yeah.
Okay. Again, something that resonates to you, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in all, in getting decks and getting runes and witchcraft and whatever, it's what you get that you can reflect and it makes a good thing in your head. You know, you really like it and it'll make it work better too in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to give you the best results magically and through divination when you're working with, you know, a material that means something to you rather than something that you might have read in a book that you should do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you jump away from certain things. You know, there's a negativity there and somebody's giving it to you and it's like, no, never, please put it away.
Right.
I don't want it. Yeah. All right. So, when working with any sort of tools, you know, we consecrate, we clear, we charge them. In my Google search, I came across the mention of rune arc, which we're laughing now because I've talked to her earlier because she had no clue what a rune arc was. And Google told me it was something that activated runes. So you know, sometimes, you know, you get the wrong answers when you need it. And thank you for going and looking after it and not laughing too hard. What do you do to activate or charge or cleanse the runes?
Sure. So for quick note, when I saw rune arcs, I was like, oh my God, is there something happening in runes that I don't know about? So what I think saw that it was more of a, I think it's at a part of a role playing game. I was like, oh, it was a relief, because I was like, okay, there's not something happening that I am unaware of.
Sorry for that. Funny now, though.
So, yeah, good question. Consecration and charging. And, you know, I do the same thing for runes as I would do when I receive or make any sort of magical tool, rather, whether it be like an athame or talismanic jewelry. I kind of have the same process for all of them, and it's an elemental cleansing and consecration. So a bowl of soil for earth, a lit candle for fire, incense for air, and a cup of water to which I usually add a couple drops of blood. And I use these to energetically cleanse and charge my new item. So, yeah, I don't have something different for the runes. Now, what if I make my own runes, like I said, I'm going to go through that 25-day ritual that I do. And I think I touch on that in my book a little bit more. But, yeah, if it's just some, if I purchase a set of runes or you know, make a wand or whatever, it's just going to go through a quick elemental cleansing and consecration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you let other people handle your runes?
The ones that I made from the willow tree, no, they are mine and mine alone. But I have many sets of runes that I use for doing readings with other people. But the willow bark, they're just for me.
And then the other ones, you just get the cooties off later, right? It's okay to touch them. You know, I mean, some people are very, very adamant about having their tools touched in any way. So.
Right. So, you know, like they have the question about what plants to keep with their runes. I actually keep mine stored with some sand that a friend brought me from the pyramids of Giza.
Oh.
So I have that with my personal set of runes always. So that's kind of my charging medium.
That's very cool.
You can use whatever is sacred to you, whatever has strong energy.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, because she has a lot of cats, maybe a little cat fur maybe would be good. I don't know. Just a thought. You know, something geared near and near to you, right?
Right. Speaking of animals, I hope you can't hear my dog barking.
I can, but we love animals. They can bark and meow and whistle all they want. It's okay. Don't even worry about it.
My son is supposed to be down there in the living room, like keeping him occupied. But by the way the barking sounds, I think my son may have
stepped out for a moment. Yes.
No. I apologize.
No, that's fine. I mean, you know, when I had a dog, she would bark every so often. When I had a bird, he would squawk. You can't shut up a bird for sure. And, you know, fortunately, my cat sleeps a lot now, so especially during the show. But, you know, that's okay. We're all animal lovers, so I never say, you know, oh, my God, somebody's got the animal background. Uh-uh, that's not going to work. And so I think we're getting close to having a break. So when we come back, we're going to talk about a lot of things about the book. And also, like you mentioned, you're going to do readings if anybody wants one. And so, you know, put on your thinking caps about if you have a question or you just want to do just a quick generic thing, do that. So sit tight, sit back, and we'll be back probably in about 2 minutes.
Way, there's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
for a truly unique podcast experience, we have you covered. Spirit Bayou with CJ Dunham airs live from the Third Coast in Southeast Texas on Tuesday and Fridays at midnight Eastern Time, covering Creole folklore and folk magic to strange paranormal activity to new equipment for the field. CJ Dunham is a Catholic swamp witch, a devotee to our Mother Mary in the Trinity, a true believer in our Lord, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. Peace be with your spirit and the spirits by you.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Hi, this is Marla with some exciting news about Stirring the Cauldron. Starting on April 25th, and then on the last Thursday of every month, I'm turning Stirring the Cauldron into a virtual classroom. Each masterclass will be taught by the cleverest of professors, and they'll be teaching on a variety of subjects. There's no tuition fee or any detention after class, and you won't get sent to the headmaster's office either, not for any reason. So conjure up your notebook, sharpen your quills, and become a student once again. Classes begin at 9 p.m. Eastern, so I'll see you then. Oh, and try not to be late. The school elf loves to give out tardy slips.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Nicolette Mialee, and we're talking about her book, Runes for the Green Witch. And before the break, we were going to start talking about the runes and the plants and all kinds of things. So we're going to get started. And also, I'll remind you again that if you want a reading, just send me a note in, well, send it to me in private mail because I might miss it if it's in the chat room. All right. So one of the things each chapter in the book lists is correspondences to the runes, with the elements, the zodiac, planet, moon phase, tarot, crystal, chakra, deities, and plants. I mean, stone is not overturned. And with the plants, you give their medicinal purposes, and it's usually not more than, I mean, it's more than one plant, so it's very cool. So what are the benefits when we do a combining of the powers of the rune and the plants?
Yeah, so synergy, basically, it's all about the amplification of energies by the use of correspondences. You know, this is essentially sympathetic magic being worked, and it's buildable, you know. For example, if you're working on a money drawing spell, you might want to pair Feihu and Cinnamon. You could go further to strengthen those energies. You may want to do it on a Thursday, day of Jupiter. You know, Jupiter is all about expansive energies. And not just any old Thursday, but maybe one that falls on a waxing moon. I think today is a Thursday during a waxing moon. Yeah. So if you want to do some money magic tonight, tonight, do it. It's just about reinforcing the similar energy and making it stronger so you get more of a better outcome with your magic.
Mm-hmm. And so many plants for each one is kind of neat because you might not be able to get a hold of one, but, you know, some of them you would have to go far away to get. Others you might have in your backyard.
Right.
So that makes it a lot easier. So give us an example, again, another example of the coupling of a particular rune and a plant.
Yeah, of course. So we were talking about let's see, plants ruled by the water element earlier. So we'll talk about Lagus, the water rune. And I brought up how mugwort would be a perfect correspondence for it. These two are both under the domains of the moon, the element of water, like I said, the divine feminine. You know, thus they strengthen each other's energies. And this is a pairing we can look to when we want to increase intuition, perform divination, emotional healing, divine feminine magic, dream magic, just so many options there. And you'll find that most, if not all of the plants that I have listed for Lagus are associated with the element of water, like catnip, willow, cato, jasmine.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think there's a question. I'm looking down and I see something. Okay. Kathy says, for tarot, I seem to be falling into a funk, lacking any oomph to get things done. Is there maybe something that I can do to jolt myself out of this?
Well, let's see. Usually, I take that as a sign that I'm being called in a different direction. So maybe it just means, you know, give tarot a break right now, because it's not, you're not in the right headspace for it. And it, maybe there's other things that are trying to get your attention. I know, like I said, I've been studying tarot and I feel very much like a student of it for almost 20 years. And when I say student, I should say I almost feel like a beginner still. And sometimes I just have to stop. I just have to, like, put them away for, you know, a month before I try to work with them again. So, yeah, sometimes you just need a little break.
Well, you know, this would be a good time to pull a reading for her. That would be interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
And explain, before you do that, explain that you have the deck, the rune deck. Talk about that for a minute.
Yes, I am using a rune deck. It's called Cosmic Whisper. And they're actually, it's not like regular tarot and oracle cards. They're very thick because they're supposed to be similar to like thick wooden runes. So it's a really cool deck. Just black and metallic gold. It's beautiful. And this is what I use mainly when I do readings for other people.
Okay. Kind of hard to shuffle, huh?
they're really thick cards. So, you just kind of, I usually just like put them on the floor and like mix them all around. So the exact question again was, can you repeat that for me? I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. Just because, I mean, what you told her about what you thought she's not, you know, in with the tarot so much. Just pull out, you know, do a card and see, you know, if it kind of blends in with what you told her.
Sure. So I drew Pairthrow, and Pairthrow, the interesting thing about it is one of the things it says in my book is it's kind of like the ask again later rune. It's, I also call it the none of your business rune. So it's when I draw Pairthrow, I take that as, you know, you kind of have to figure it out for yourself. I hate to say that as a response, but that's the rune that I drew. but yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's just a call to, well, you know, when we're getting frustrated like that, to, you know, put the deck away and focus on some other things for a minute. I'll just go with that, since the rune that I pulled is the none of your business rune.
she put in the chat room, she said, good answer. I didn't think about it that way. Better than sounding lazy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, partly. just coming back around to it later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes whenever if I really want to push myself to do something to, you know, to maybe study tarot, but I haven't been feeling it, if I read a book on it, usually gets me like in the mood and excited to do something. I just read I read Magical Tarot by Madame Pamita. That was the last book I read. And it was such a fun book and really easily digestible in it. And it got me excited about doing tarot. So, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you read all the books about it and it's just like a classroom. You know,
right.
These are study books. But then you'll pick up one book that has a whole different way of teaching. And that's when you get back to being interested. You know, instead of just thinking, oh, God, I got to, you know, turn in a book report kind of thing. So, yeah, that's a good thing. You talk about or you tell people about working with plant allies, with the plant allies. And there are a lot of people that don't do that. So can you kind of explain on how to work with the allies or who are the allies or what are the allies? You know, some people, are they spirit, plant spirits or what?
Sure. So plant allies, plant spirit allies are typically the plants that you personally vibe with. Like I mentioned earlier, one of mine is the willow tree, which I made my personal set of runes out of. So the plant ally is definitely a personal thing. But ways to work with them, oh man, there's so many. The simplest being a tea, you know, herbal tea, ingesting before ritual. Tinctures, smoking the herbs. There are some herbs other than marijuana that you can smoke, like damiana and chamomile and mugwort. Of course, when you're doing these ingestible methods, you want to know exactly what you're doing. Safe to ingest in that manner. So I wouldn't recommend just going and smoking all the herbs that you got,
because
not all of them are good for that.
Incense is probably, whoopsie, great minds, yes.
And loose incense is super easy and fun to make. You can add herbs to baths for ritual baths. My personal favorite way to work with herbs magically is through infused ritual oils. These actually take up like the bulk of my shop. I think just because I have so much fun making them. And using them, you can make smoke wands. Even just hanging a plant in your home is a great way to evoke its power in the space. I come from an Italian family on my mom's side, and it's not uncommon to see bunches of garlic hanging around the house. And it's, you know, not just to make yummy pasta sauce, but it's also seen as a very protective, very protective plant, you know, so much so that it became famous for repelling vampires, right? And that came from garlic being in a potropaic plant that has long been used to repel evil.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. Do you read do you read the runes for yourself?
I do. Yeah.
It's controversial in some ways.
Reading runes for yourself?
Yeah, some people, any reading for yourself with any divination, you know, because sometimes you think you know yourself too well and then you wouldn't read the card or the rune that you would say to somebody else because you know yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we read for ourselves, we definitely run the risk of, you know, kind of lying to ourselves or nudging the things that we want to hear. So, yeah. But I do read for myself, and I try to only do it when I'm emotionally stable, so I don't have the urge to, you know, lie to myself like I would if I was sad or angry. So, and I think that's such an important thing with divination in general, is just approaching it with a level head. Otherwise, you're just going to color the reading a certain way.
Yeah, and it's kind of tricky, you know, if you can kind of sit, if you're being honest with yourself, you know, if you're going to lie and say, okay, well, no, this is, no, I'm thinking it this way, and you wouldn't have said that to anybody else, you know.
Right.
It's just, yeah, it gets difficult. Where am I here? Okay. We have another reading from Dinah, and she would just like a general one.
Okay. All right. I actually pulled Lagus, the one we have talked so much about. This is the water rune. This is a rune that's telling you to pay attention to your intuition, pay attention to your dreams, focus on how your emotions have been lately. It's definitely a rune that is telling you to turn inward and, you know, see what's going on with yourself, with yourself physically, like mentally, like I said, through dreams. Talk to yourself, listen to yourself, see where you're at.
Mm-hmm. That's a good, you know, sometimes we need a wake-up call. And do you ever use your runes in conjunction with tarot or oracle decks or anything?
Yeah, and that's why I added all those correspondences in the book, because I don't use runes and tarot together for divination, but I use them together in ritual, in spellcraft, mostly, like I said, to just amplify the energies that I'm working with.
Okay. And as you, one of the correspondences is the chakra. Now, how does that work? I mean, we know deities.
That was one of the more difficult ones, I think. Well, for some of them, you know, some of them were really easy, like Anzu's, the rune of communication. Obviously, we were able to pair that easily with the throat chakra. Lagus, the rune that we've been talking so much about, that was kind of a no-brainer for the third eye chakra, the intuition, the psychic energy. But then there are some chakras that I felt had, you know, so many aspects to them that it could have been one of many runes, like the root chakra is very earthy, and it's about stability and survival. And a lot, many of the runes have that just earth element, kind of grittiness. Not really, having a hard time trying to figure out how to explain it. But does that make sense at all?
It does. Yeah, no, it really does.
Okay,
we got another reading. Mufi would like a general reading as well.
All right. So this time around, I've pulled Ingwaz. This is the seed rune. And when I pull this, my thought, I'm being told to pay attention to my ideas. It's time to put them into action. You know, this is the seed rune. It's the acorn that contains within it the blueprint of the mighty oak tree, right? So it's saying you have some ideas that are ready to be put into action.
Okay. I mean, these are really simple to explain. You know, sometimes with different cards or different types of divination, it's got to be, you know, more complex. But this is pretty cut and dry, huh?
Yes and no. You know, when I work one-on-one with clients who have specific questions, sometimes it can get a little bit more difficult because we can look at runes through lenses of psychology, spirituality, or even just the mundane meanings. So depending on what the inquiry is, that can make it a little bit more difficult. But if it's just a general reading, you know, I'm going to like the past couple have been, I think it's a little easier. It's just the, I don't want to say the mundane meanings, but they're, I don't know. I guess their most obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'm getting.
You get like me. It's contagious. Because sometimes, you know, if I'm doing a tarot reading and it's not quite clear, I grab my oracle deck out. And honestly, it helps. It seems to just click right into whatever card I picked from the oracle deck has the kind of the information that was lacking. And I keep scratching my head about that. Every time that happens, it's like, really? Now, how did that happen? Wow, that's magic.
If I come across in a reading something where I'm super stumped, I pull out my pendulum to clarify. That has been very helpful.
Yeah, I love grabbing the pendulum, just, you know, okay, let's do it. You know, I know you're going to say something, yes or no. That's all I need to know.
And,
it's really interesting. So let's talk about, wait a minute, hang on a second. Another reading from CC and a general one.
All right. And I pulled Kanaz. Off the bat, my thoughts are, you know, put your energy into your passions, into the hobbies that give your life meaning. You know, these are the creative endeavors. It might not necessarily be like a visual art. It might be cooking. It might be playing music. Whatever it is, indulge yourself in it. Allow it to nurture your spirit.
That's good. That's good. Something in the chat room wrote, that she likes the direct answers. Put it right out there. That's what it pretty much is.
That's what I think. What I was trying to say is, you know, when it's a general reading, it's just, you know, the runes have their own direct energies that when you pull it, you know. So thank you to whoever wrote that. That's the word I think I was looking for before.
It's always good to have somebody come up with that word, and it's relief at that point. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your store and the things that they can get there. First of all, get out your address, your website address, and then talk about what's on in your website. And
So it is an Etsy shop, but you can access it through handfulsofdust.com. Handfuls of Dust is also my Instagram and my TikTok name. So I try to keep it really simple by making everything the same name. So handfulsofdust.com, it'll take you right to my apothecary, and you can get my book here. This is where I'm going to have all those handmade ritual oils and incenses, everything I make ritually. Everything I make during, the corresponding planetary times. I just added to the shop some Blue Moon Bath Blend, and that one I made during the last full moon. So I don't just throw things together. These definitely come from the heart, and I like for people to know that, because my shop really comes from, you know, my passions. So I've got, you know, the big sellers are the plant infused oils, incense, the epoxy runes with the plants inside. Those are popular. I do have some tinctures in there. I think I have some beginner herb sets. A nice mix of different ritual tools, a lot of them being herbal in some form or another.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing for us to go window shopping, because there's a lot to see.
Yeah, please, yeah.
And, you know, it's really nice to have something that's not coming from some other place that, you know, they do it by rote, you know, they do it by machine, and, you know, there's not the personal touch. Yeah. And so if everything that you make is homemade, it's bound to work so much better. And, yeah, and, you know, we always, I think all of us do too, we like to get our stuff with independent people rather than conglomeration people that have the money already, you know, bookstores and all kinds of stuff. So, Dinah, want you to give the website again, please, and maybe spell it out.
Yeah, so it's Handfuls, plural, H-A-N-D-F-U-L-S, handfulsofdust.com. Actually, I created a free shipping coupon to share for this podcast, and it's Greenwich, all no spaces, doesn't matter if it's capitalized or not. So yeah, if you all want to take a look at the shop, you see something you like, use that Greenwich coupon and you can get free U.S. shipping. I should add, it is just in the U.S. because shipping elsewhere is very expensive.
Yeah, go through customs. Yes, yeah, it's hard to do it. Well, I mean, thank you. That's really nice to do. So there's other things up on there about teaching or whatever else. You have several different pages on the website.
Yeah, I just launched a Patreon. We did a first rune class the day before the eclipse. It was past working the rune, so it was a little bit more of an advanced rune class, and it went great. And after that, I got a lot of requests for an intro to runes class. So that's in the works right now. I'm shooting for probably the first Sunday of May. And anyone who's interested in that intro to runes class, you know, just follow me on Instagram or TikTok, and I will keep everyone posted once the tickets are available. They're very affordable, very affordable.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, there's several pages that I was, you know, looking up and down, and then I went into the apothecary, and then I was kind of getting starry-eyed about, okay, I'm going to get really rich now, rob a bank and come back and, you know, buy things. I mean, you know, it's not really, really, really expensive, but you know how it is when you want one thing and it's not enough. And then you go look at the other thing and then you think, well, do I want both or do I want one? And yeah, there's too many goodies in there, which is not a bad thing.
I feel the pain. I feel the pain.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to get out of here, and I want to thank you for, you know, making me understand the runes and probably everybody else. You made it simple. I used to think it was so complicated.
Aww.
Now I get it. So,
aww, good.
Thank you
well,
for that.
Thank you so much, Orla. I'm very, very happy that you asked me to do this. It was a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Well, maybe you down the line, because, you know, if you were listening to the thing, we do master classes once a month, and maybe you want to teach one.
That would be awesome. I'd love to attend some too.
They're the last Friday of every month, and I mean Thursday of every month, and different topics, lots of teachers, and it's going to be fun. All right, and well, thank you guys for listening in also. So until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.